You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You really do wear the pants now in this relationship. You're counting things down. Deciding when we start. Know. You're deciding what the topic is.
Yeah.
Welcome to The Crunch. It is your boy, Ethan.
I'm sorry. 1 second. A bunch of kids started just screaming outside of my window. Uh-huh.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Are they your kids now that you're married?
Yeah, now that I'm married. Sorry. Hi, so many kids. I'm Patrick Marriage Nevy. Welcome to the podcast.
In your marriage, did you also lose your microphone?
I did. Or do I sound that bad? Yeah.
No, you don't sound that bad, but I think it's just funny because now there's this clear demarcator between nice, clean-cut bachelor Pat and already, even just 2 weeks in, no microphone.
Don't get married, kids. Your audio quality goes way down.
No, late to the freaking pod because you were at Old Navy with your wife. Who are you? Who are you? This is not the podcast I signed up for. I didn't get married. No. I didn't start this podcast so that you could go shopping with your wife.
No, listen.
I'm upset.
She needed to close for her new job. Okay. She did. It was important.
I'm sure it was. Side business isn't important. Her work is, but your work isn't.
Wow. You've really changed, man.
You're so different. You don't even want to be in the band anymore, dude.
I thought the music was what drove you. You changed. Okay, so what were we talking about?
We were talking about you being married and having kids.
Oh, no, we were talking about the audio. We need to explain the audio quality. So I was told not to come to work because of COVID. I took a test. They shoved the thing up my nose. It was the worst ever. It sucks. Don't do it unless you need to, obviously. And I'm negative. The test came back, which is great. But we had a confirmation retreat planned for today, and I couldn't go because they were like, sorry, you can't do anything. Like, if you go to the office, people are going to go home. Like, they don't want you around. And I was like, okay. And so I had to hurriedly collect all my things and go home, and I forgot my mic cable. So I know, I'm still holding out hope that I brought it, because I remember looking at it and go, I better not forget that, but I did. So
it's okay. No one's mad at you. Everybody's so overjoyed at your reception of the sacrament of marriage that they won't even care. They won't
That's
even
true.
Be mad.
I both received it and bestowed it.
That was just crazy, huh? And I was right next to you. I was right there.
You were there.
My sleeves were rolled up. My vest was on.
Florida black tie.
Was clipped. Can I, just for the people at home who didn't get to be at your marriage, tell the folks, how was it? How did it go?
It was perfect. Like, honestly, we kept talking about that all throughout the honeymoon, how just like, wow, we really had a perfect wedding, didn't we? Like, that's what it felt like. And obviously, it wasn't everything we thought it was going to be, right? But even in that, it was still perfect. Everything, I mean, first of all, the ceremony was beautiful, right? Everyone looked amazing. Everyone was so happy, right? Phoebe looked gorgeous.
Oh, she did.
She stole the show. Which
she
is like,
absolutely.
Yeah, she looked beautiful. Father Anthony's homily was fantastic. It's still available on the internet. The church streamed it. First of all,
check out patreon.com/thecrunch to hear Father Anthony's wedding homily.
Yeah. Our my wedding ceremony is behind a paywall. Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
No, you can get it. You can find it online for free. It was super last minute, but one of my former core team members from my youth ministry, my church set up a streaming deck for coronavirus, and she knows how to run it. And so she was like, I'll run your stream. I don't know if you've checked it out, but it looks fantastic.
Is it a good stream?
Yeah, there's four camera angles.
Holy cow.
They can pan, right? Wow. Like, the cameras are great. They installed this before we even got there. So it was, we got like a great quality wedding video for completely free.
I can't believe they did that to make sure that I was in the shot. Like, it's super cool.
It's super cool. They were like,
they installed all of those cameras to make sure that Ethan Stevie, formerly known as Apropostle, would be in all of the shots in high def.
What means a lot to me, honestly, what means a lot to both myself and Phoebe is that more people watched the wedding stream on YouTube than were like invited to the wedding. Like, four times
as
many people watched it. Yeah. Wow. So like, so many people got to be a part of it. Which, like,
how many of those were Russian hackers?
Sorry, it turns out I colluded with the Russians to inflate the numbers of my wedding stream.
Comrade, get over here. Watch this.
But we should unironically put the homily from. We should put the YouTube link to the homily. The church streamed it, and they said they weren't going to leave it public, but they did, which I'm fine with. So now you can just go find it. So we'll put the link in the description if you want to watch the homily part. Plus, the homily is that, and then the marriage happened. So,
right. So all you got to do is fast forward through all that introductory stuff where we read from the Bible, and then get to the meat, which is the wedding. And it was so great. It's so beautiful. It's so fun to be there. I loved being there. I had this weird energy. Can I tell you my experience of the wedding?
Yes, please do.
I love that you're talking about your wedding, but I would like to now talk about your wedding. I loved being kind of like the senior groomsman. Like, all of the guys that were in your wedding had never, it appeared that as if they had never been in a wedding before. And so when you were busy doing stuff, I was kind of the deciding authority on what we were going to do. And it was awesome. It was just so fun because I've been in lots of weddings before. So I kind of know in general, like, what happens and what doesn't happen. And so it was super cool to like be this sort of eldest boy in the lineup
the boyest boy.
And literally, I can't remember who it was, it might have been Daniel. He came up to me and he was like, you're so good at this, how did you do this? And I was like, I just am like 2 years older than you, I've been in more weddings like this.
And you and Daniel are definitely the same age.
What's up?
You and Daniel are the same age.
Yeah, I'm like 3 years older than Daniel. And so
okay, can I just say, like first of all, I had the best wedding party ever. Like, everybody
was
so
fun. All the boys were so fun. All the ladies were great.
It was
awesome.
Great. But also, so my household at Franciscan has this tradition, and it was kind of the tradition. I kind of adapted the tradition for a friend's wedding. We sing "I'll Be" by Edwin McCain, which is like just so goofy, and we serenade each other. Me. Yeah, that song. And
learn it.
We sing it every week to each other, like, as a goof at the end of our like main gathering thing. And eventually a bunch of the guys decided to do it for brides. When a Fisher got married, we would do it for the bride. And then at my friend Ryan's wedding a couple of years ago, I was like, you know what? We're going to do it even harder. We're going to go even harder on this song. And so we had all the guys like run and sing it at the woman. And then we lifted her up on the chair and all that stuff. And then we did it at another wedding a month ago. And I was like, I was kind of bummed because I didn't take a lot of time to like review that with my groomsmen. And so I was like, maybe the I'll Be thing, it's not going to go as well as I thought it. It went amazing.
It was so
fun. When did you guys practice?
While the girls were doing whatever they did with you.
Perfect.
So we were just outside, not paying attention to this cool part of the reception, and we were practicing putting people up on chairs.
It looked so good. I was also bummed because a lot of the fishers that knew that tradition weren't there, and so I was like, well, I want my groomsmen to do it, even though a lot of them don't know.
It was literally just Nino. Nino just took charge of the whole situation.
Nino, what a guy.
Without,
yeah.
Without Nino. Hi, my name's Nino.
Nino.
To reference.
Nino ended up staying in Melbourne longer than I did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because of flights, yeah. And my mom was like, I miss him. He should come back.
Aw.
But yeah, that honestly, like my wedding week was exactly what I wanted it to be, in the sense that I didn't realize how great it was going to be. Like that's... I had this great vision when I, like a couple years ago, I was like, I want a whole week party. I want a week long party before the wedding with like all like people come in slow, little by little. And then everybody's there at the end of the day. And then it just boom, you know, marriage. Right. And that ended up being what it was. And I'm very happy with it.
Good. And that's all that matters, is that you and Phoebe are happy, that you're married. And now you've got lots of screaming children
outside our apartment,
outside your apartment, that are definitely yours. Definitely your kids that you made, that you have
together.
I know that you were really busy, but I did you the favor of actually doing this podcast that we do together every
single
week. I did it for you while we were gone. So the one
episode I've never been in.
The one episode you've never been in, and it's like it's totally not fair because you've done like 10 episodes without me.
Yeah.
And I've done this one without you, but I just want you to know that I worked really hard on it and that it was such a pain, and you better be glad that I'm such a good co-host, or else.
Yeah.
You'd be out thousands.
Uh-huh. Millions. We would have lost so many listeners. I can't imagine. I haven't listened to it. I've been meaning to, because
it's okay, you don't have to. Listen to the part with me and Emma. You can listen to the part with me and Patrick if you want. But
so it was like split up. I'm not gonna ask questions because everybody that listened knows.
Right.
But
you can ask.
You like split it up, Emma and
I did,
Patrick.
With Tolls, I did the intro, we did a Hot Take Time Machine, then we did a Crunch on that, and then I stopped it, and then I transitioned, and we did Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner, which is me and Emma, recorded at separate times.
Oh, that's cool. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun.
That's fun. We should do a whole episode with Emma eventually, because Phoebe got to be on the podcast.
I don't think Emma desires to be on a whole episode. I think her 20-minute Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner debut
was enough.
Was hit the fix.
I will say that when Phoebe and I did our episode together, it took a while to get into a rhythm of transitioning from just being Patrick and Phoebe to being Patrick and Phoebe on a podcast.
Yes, it's different. Emma jumped into it just full steam ahead and just crushed it from the very beginning. Like she was before, and she was like, what if we mess up? And I was like, it's okay, I can edit it. And then she jumped in, she just started like throwing out jokes and roasting me immediately. And I was like, wow, perfect. You're already so good. And then we just had great conversation, and it was fun. It was super good.
Good for you, Emma. This is funny. This is turning into the podcast. The podcast where we review previous episodes of our podcast.
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, we don't have to do that anymore. I love this podcast. The more that we get married, the more self-referential the podcast will become.
Yes. So when you get married, the podcast will become even more self-referential, where I'll do a podcast with another guy named Ethan and then my wife.
Do you know any other guys named Ethan?
I know one. He's one of my teens. We call him Ethanos. And every time we call him that, he looks at me and he snaps. It's great.
That's kind of a teenager thing to do, but I love it.
It's very good.
How about we do the Hot Take Time Machine?
Let's hop into the Hot Take Time Machine.
Yes.
Welcome to the Hot Take Time Machine. Go ahead. Do the thing.
Welcome to the Hot Take Time Machine. It's the part of the show where Patrick takes a time machine and finally comes back to his roots, the podcast, and leaves his wife for me once more. We're back. Back in time, back in 2017, when we both didn't have beards and we were single. Well, one of us was single. But then we broke up, and now we're back. And
we're back,
Twitter. Now we're back, baby. What's on the Twitter? It's the
Welcome back to
show.
Interdimensional Cable, the part of the show where we rip off the Rick and Morty joke style.
Yes. Please give us your hot take on Twitter, 5 years or older. If you have a hot take, send it to
patreon.com. Oh, yeah. If you have a hot take, send it to us. All right. This hot take comes from a time that was in 2017. So this hot take came in, it was 2017 in June. I was tweeting this when I was in college. So it's kind of weird that I joked about sneaking into a Steubenville conference, but anyway.
Still funny.
Me sneaks into a Steubenville conference. Security. Is this kid legit? Me. Cross clap. Security. He checks out.
Oh, man.
Pretty good, right?
It's super, super good. Is that an earnest? Was that ironic in any way?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Gosh. Was it in 2017 that everybody was mad about the cross clap?
Yes.
What was the argument?
I think it was, would you cross clap at the foot of the cross? And it's like, no, you read the room, dude. Like, obviously not.
There's a lot of things I wouldn't do at the foot of the cross that aren't necessarily bad.
I found another hot take. It was a retweet of another. It was a reference to another tweet. So I found the link and I'm pulling it up on Twitter. Oh no, the tweet's unavailable. But I think someone called me an ortho cuck. And so I said,
is it because you did the cross clap from right to left instead of from left to right?
That was a good one. That was a
thank
deep
you.
Cut.
Thank you.
I said, Ortho Cux is my new band name, except maybe with an X at the end.
That's really funny. I think Ortho Cuck, well, that can mean anything. What does that mean?
What does it mean?
I think, yeah, well, there's lots of things. That
Sorry, it sounded like someone was banging at our door for a second.
No, oh, our door, huh?
Yeah, our door. I live here with another person, and her name is my wife.
Okay. Well, whenever you're done with that little side experiment, I'm sorry. it's so weird knowing that you're in the room with another person. Like, it's just weird.
No, she's in the other room now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're good. You're good. She's not looking at you.
It feels when I'm listening to this in my mind, I'm envisioning.
I'm sorry. Like,
me talking to you, and then she's just kind of sitting across the table from you, just kind of like looking at you and listening. And so it makes me feel weird because I feel like I'm intruding now on your life.
Yeah. Okay.
So
one last tweet from me. Okay.
Okay. Lay
this
it on
is
me.
A series of three good ones. So this was a retweet of a tweet. I looked up again. It only shows me the Twitter URL. So I pulled up the Twitter URL. Someone tweeted, your DJ name is DJ plus your biggest fear. You remember those tweets?
Yeah, I do.
So you do like DJ pillowcase. Pillowcase is your biggest fear, LOL.
Sure.
DJ small confined spaces, etc. Okay. So my tweet was, my DJ name is DJ finding out alcohol sucks after 21 years of building. Oh.
That's funny. It doesn't really roll off the tongue, but it's, not very good for marketing.
It's reality.
But it's true. It's true.
Okay, now that I've done three hot take time machines, you give us yours.
I'll give you one. I thought alcohol was good when it first came out.
Like I liked its early stuff. I'm not a big fan of the new
yeah kind
the
of
newer
the newer albums are not great, but I always love that first ride. You know, nothing will ever be quite like it. So this one's from August 25th, 2015. I'm actually kind of doing what the segment is and
not just reading great tweets.
Not just fast forwarding to the time when we were actually good at Twitter. This one says, it's a picture. I'll describe the picture to you. It says, being at college again has really reminded me how true this is. It's a picture of John Paul II. And it says, can I show you in the voice? It is the duty.
Well, I didn't hear what you said. You didn't say it right.
It is the duty of every man to uphold the dignity of every woman.
Yes.
St. John Paul II.
Excuse me, m'lady. You dropped your dignity. Let me uphold it for you.
27 retweets, 62 likes. I just love the thought that's like I'm walking around the college campus just absolutely disgraced at how the men are treating the woman. And I'm like, oh, this is... You know what I should do to fix this? I should tweet. And then, like, also, at this point in my life, I definitely, like, wasn't the most virtuous dude. And so, it just seems so off to me to be reading this now, and it's like, man, yeah. I really thought I was better than everybody else, huh? Because I had this picture in my camera roll, you know?
Yeah.
Like, wow. Man, I was just this social justice warrior walking around campus, upset at everybody, telling no one. Except the people online that have
no
clue. It was pretty good. I'm on a big JP2 kick.
Oh, at that point in time?
In my life right now.
Or in current, yes.
In current.
I'm on a big Ratzinger kick.
We can talk about that in the crunch on that. What do you mean you're on a big Ratzinger kick?
Well, so I've been reading, I guess it's also a JP2 kick as well. They were like boys.
They were boys.
You know, they were contemporaries. Well,
they hung out.
they hung out. They were a fan. They were a gang. And I just finished reading a book called Epiphany of Love. It was really hard to read at first, but it got easier. It's a little 150 page book, and I sat down. I was like, I could probably get this done over the wedding week, right? No, sir. 3-hour plane ride. I got through like 30 pages. It was not.
Is it just not dense?
Pretty. It's very dense. And he uses philosophical and like moral theological phrases that you're like supposed to know and you don't. And
how do you learn those things? Do you have to go to school? Is there a book?
Apparently.
Is there a dictionary?
There's not a glossary in the back. I checked.
That sucks.
But it's basically an expansion of Veritatis Splendor, and okay. So he brings up John Paul II and Ratzinger a lot, and essentially
who wrote this book?
His name is Livio Molina.
Okay.
You probably never heard of him. He's pretty underground.
Yeah, he's pretty underground. To be fair, it takes pretty high IQ to understand the Livio Molina.
It did. I texted a priest friend and I was like, I need help figuring out this book. And I was like, he's like, what book is it? And I told him this. He's like, oh yeah, Livio Molina. I'm like, shut up. You don't know him.
You have no clue.
How dare you? He's like, oh yeah, I've read that book a couple of times. And I'm like, how? Benedict's emphasis is very incarnational, and this book kind of opened me up to see how incarnational moral theology really is. I think my understanding of what morality is still very Protestant in the sense of it's textualist, it's very like legalistic, you know. So I this kind of opened me up to understand, oh wait, no, this is actually more about the lived experience of human beings. The main thesis you could sum it up in: we need to think of morality from the first person perspective, not the third person.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to look at like the act from the person. What is the good that person is searching for? Yeah. Instead of what did that person do?
What did they do? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because its intent is a lot of what is happening in action. You know, like the intent is the beginning of an action in the will. Like I'm intending to do this thing, and the circumstance all plays into that, and then the action itself. And so, like, I think we judge ourselves way too harshly sometimes when it comes to. I think it's an interesting flip flop, right? Because when we're doing something bad, we judge ourselves way too harshly because we did a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But when we're doing good things, regardless of our motives, like we might be doing a good thing, like we might go help somebody so that they might help us, right? But we only judge it based off of, oh, well, I did this good thing, and my intention was to help them, even though like it might have not have actually been helpful. It might have only been for the optics, you know, those kinds of things. Like we judge ourselves really harshly on the bad stuff, and then don't judge ourselves properly when it comes to doing the good things, and then it's flip-flopped in other people, right? And it's just terrible. It's crazy. But I think that's really good. That's interesting.
Can I amend what you said a little bit?
Please. I might have said it wrong.
So intention, he actually talks about how intention, there are only three ways to judge an action, and it's intention, consequences, and the object of the action. Sure. And he says that the first two things are very flimsy because you can't tell the future, you don't know what the consequences are, and your own intentions are very hard to comprehend as well.
They're mixed, always.
There was an episode of Friends, and I know that's the worst show to bring up because it sucks.
It's the best way to start a sentence when you're talking about
morality.
The theology of morality.
But there's an episode of Friends where Phoebe and Joey are arguing about whether or not you can do a selfless act. It's actually very philosophical. She's like, you can't do anything that's completely selfless. And he's like, no, I can do something that's completely selfless. But every time he does something, she finds a reason that why it was selfish in the end. And even when he actually does something that was selfless, she says, nope, you only did that to prove that you were selfless. And so there's this constant,
there's no way to win.
There's no way to win. And so we kind of play that game. And this is a big argument that people throw at Christians, is like, you're only being good so that you can get into heaven. It's just a reward. So there's this idea of like, what are my motivations really? And I think that's part of it. A priest friend of mine always says, like, you can't really tell your own intentions. I frequently get very agitated about what my intentions are and very anxious. And so he goes, you can't really tell your, no one's intentions are completely pure, right? And so you can't really judge your actions based off of your intentions either. The only thing you can judge is based on the object of your actions, and the object of your action should never change, right? Or it does, but it should never change. It should always be God. And yeah. So that's kind of the, and I don't know how to explain it, because I don't really understand it fully myself, what the difference is between object and intention.
Yeah.
But maybe someone smarter than us can maybe explain it.
I think what we need to start doing is we need to start having people who are way smarter than us on the podcast so that we can get big brained. Because if we just keep having each other on the podcast, then we're always going to be having someone dumber than us on the show.
What are you saying? We're making each other dumber?
I think it's very possible.
I'm dumber than you and you're dumber than me.
I was going for the, I approach the podcast like I'm smarter than you, and you approach the podcast like you're smarter than me. So we're always dumber no matter what, because we're always, no, I don't think that's true. I do think you're very intelligent.
I think you're all right.
It's fine. I get it. Moving on. Do you want to do a crunch on that?
Sure.
For me, your first married crunch on that.
Yes. Okay. Crunch on that. It's time to crunch on that. That's all I got. I did come
when
up with that on the
phone. When I got married, I didn't wear a hat. Okay.
I don't know why that rhyme was funnier than the other rhymes that we've done.
That one is just because it was about you and your wedding. And yeah, so it was contextual. Yeah. I want to unpack everything with you.
Okay, I still haven't unpacked from the honeymoon, so this is a good start.
I've been reading George Weigel.
Ooh.
Witness to Hope.
Okay.
Big biography about John Paul II. Like, I didn't realize how big it was until I got it. It is, hold on.
I gotta drag it over here.
It's over 1,000 pages.
Wow.
And I had no clue. When I ordered it on thriftbooks.com, that's thriftbooks.com/crunch. No, we don't have a deal with them. I wish we did. Hallow.com/thecrunch.
Hallow.com/thecrunch.
We love Hallow. But I'm reading this book, and so I read Jason Evert's book on JP2 a while ago, like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that was good, but I need some more meat on my bones, you know? And so he referenced this biography a lot as kind of his inspiration and what he pulled from a lot of to write that smaller, more focused book on JP2. So I ordered it, and I've been reading it, and I am fascinated. I am shocked. I am in awe. I am confused. I'm happy. I'm sad. I don't know what to feel.
Anytime. It's a lot of emotions.
It's a lot of emotions, but these are trying times. Some would say uncertain. And so a lot of the things that I've just been thinking about recently is his time when he was a university chaplain, because that was the beginning of, well, also I want to talk about saints in general. Okay, so let's rewind. Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Do you get the sense sometimes that in popular Catholicism, we just drastically simplify the lives of the saints to make people feel better about how mediocre they are?
You know, now that I think about it, kind of, yeah.
I've recently read the book on a very definitive book on Pier Giorgio, and I'm reading this book on Karol Wojtyła, and I am upset that it seems like, especially Pier Giorgio, right, who lived this radical life, he gets simplified to being the mountain guy, you know, and people post Verso Alto on their Facebook, and they're like, "Wow, I'm just like him."
They walked down the street.
I too like mountains. And it's like, that's garbage.
I went to Colorado and hiked. I don't like mountains anymore.
Right. And even I did this, right? There's a tweet from like 2016 or 2015 where I posted a picture of me on a mountain and I said, I want to be like Frassati. Like, because I just thought that was the thing.
Yeah.
And now I'm reading this book about JP2 and hearing about guys like Jan Tiranowski, who's a great example, right, of a layman who led, you know, these living rosary groups. And like, that's the reason that JP2 kind of began his journey, like discovered Carmelite spirituality. Like, Jan Tiranowski was his spiritual mentor in a lot of ways, other than his father. And so, super important. I'm not diminishing in any way the importance of looking to these people as like examples. But what I am saying is, when you have people talking about, okay, you know, you can be just like JP2, you know, or like he really loved married families and he led these groups out in the wilderness and so can you. You can also do this, right? Especially hear this a lot in missionary circles, right? Because I'm a missionary and our job is to take young people and lead them in these small groups. So like Jan Tiernowski, Pier Giorgio, John Paul II are all very natural people to look towards, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm reading more about them and I'm feeling like we've watered them down drastically. And this is not an attack at anybody. I don't want to get anyone in trouble with any organization at all.
That may or may not employ even.
That may or may not employ me. And yes, this is partially about Focus. It's also partially about Life Teen. It's partially about Word on Fire. It's partially about everything that puts out Catholic content, right? I feel like is complicit in this, including
our
podcast.
So it's partially about us, yeah.
Yes, right? Like, I want to include everybody in this. Nobody's safe on the crunch.
Not even us.
But it feels like when we simplify guys like Jan Tiernowski to being just like a layman who led small groups of rosaries, we're doing him and a saintly life a disservice. Because that man didn't just decide one day to start leading these groups. What he decided one day was, I want to be a saint. I want to become a mystic. So he created a schedule for himself that was more rigorous than most religious orders' prayer schedules. He never got married. He read hundreds and hundreds of books, and he spoke multiple languages. Mm-hmm. And then, kind of later in his life, he had the opportunity to start leading these young men and affected them all very deeply because he had achieved this unitive state of prayer with God because through St. John of the Cross, primarily, right, in his writings. And so I feel like, okay, I'm being told like, yes, I can lead these groups and I want to lead groups like this. And I read about JP2 when he was at the university. He was at St. Florian's, I think was the name of it. And it's talking about how he would go in and the young people just wanted to be around him, and he took them out into nature and he gave these classes and he all these things. And I understand I'm not a theology major. I understand I don't have a doctorate, right? Obviously there are some differences between me and Karol Wojtyła, and I think it'd be silly to not recognize those. However, I just am, I'm feeling this kind of tension and this weight between I'm being pushed by all of these Catholic people I feel like I'm being pushed by the Catholic Church to be a great saint, and they're setting these great examples in front of me, but they're not actually telling me like what it costs to do what they've done. You know, they don't tell. I feel like we don't get the full story because we're scared that that might drive people away. And
we're like,
I just want to talk about that a little bit. I want to kind of flesh that out. And I don't want to attack anybody. I don't want anybody to feel like they've done anything wrong or they've misrepresented these saints, because I understand it's probably coming from a place of we want these saints to be approachable and not intimidating. I get that. I'm on that train. But I just want some help to figure out in my brain where this all works.
So we were in a jewelry store today because Phoebe needed to get her her engagement and wedding ring soldered together. And we were passing by. The Webster's Dictionary defines a wedding as.
That's funny.
So we passed by the case of watches, and we were like, "Oh, these are really pretty. Like, oh, that's cool." And she was like, "Do you want a watch like this?" And I was like, "I mean, sure, but like, probably not these." She's like, "Oh, why not?" And I was like, "There's probably a reason they don't put the price in the case with the watch."
Yeah.
Right. And it's because if they did, you would immediately walk away. And I wonder if we're doing the same thing with sainthood. Are we showing the shiny watches and being like, you could live like this and you could be great like this, but we're not showing the cost because we're afraid that they're going to walk away. Yes. But what if the opposite, what if that's okay? And I say this on youth minister
forums sometimes. What if it's okay to not show the cost, you mean?
No. What if it's okay if people walk away?
That people walk away. Okay, yeah, I got you.
I say this on youth ministry forums sometimes. I said it a couple of times. I know.
On the chats.
And it got me kind of, I got kind of yelled at once. Because someone was talking about like, how do we reach all these kids? Like, how do I reach all these kids at the parish? And I was like, look, you're one person. You can likely hold a relationship with five to 10 students that call you like a mentor. Yeah. And then maybe 30 others that call you like kind of an acquaintance. But other than that, like, you need other people. Otherwise, you need to just focus on who you have and then just pray for the rest.
Yeah.
And someone was like, are you – Jesus went after the one. And I'm like, yeah, he went after the one and left the 99. Like, that takes an intense focus. And it's like sometimes we have to be okay with not converting 30,000 Calvinists like Francis de Sales, because we're not Francis de Sales, right? Because we're not – someone who has a deep and interior knowledge of the interior life like he did. I think I kind of want to know what the cost is. That's what I want to know. I want to know how I can communicate it. Maybe we don't communicate the cost because we don't know it.
We probably don't. I mean, we probably don't understand at all, because
I'm trying to think if I communicate the cost to my students.
I'm trying to think if I communicate it to my team, the students that I'm working with. Like, this is kind of, I recently realized that, like, and I've repented of this, that I just like haven't been sharing the gospel with students. Like, I've just kind of been implicitly sharing it, which sucks, because that's like part of my job.
Yeah,
that's part of what we get taught, and it's part of what we teach other students to do. And this is why so many people like have problems with focus, is because there are missionaries like me who have the best of intentions, who go out and they like don't do it all perfectly. Like, I've messed up the past 2 years a lot. And then it's like, well, you're supposed to do this, but you did this. It's like, yeah, I was supposed to do that and I didn't, and I'm sorry, you know, but like, I'm scared. You get so scared because you feel like such an outsider when you come into these places. And it really makes me think about Jesus, because God is so infinitely different than us. And so by all rights, it would have been okay for Jesus to feel like an outsider, because he was us, but not us. But it's just like, it's the love of God for humanity that he was able to cross that bridge. And there's a lot to be said about that. But like, in a lot of ways, we have, like, do we love the people that we're with enough to kind of overcome that? Like, I feel different. Like, yes, I might be a little bit older, you know, I might be married and they might not be married, you know, I'm coming into this place where the things that I have to say and the things that I deeply believe in are hated and reviled by most people. It's really, really hard to get over that It's really, really hard. And so that's why I get frustrated, is because they say, oh, we'll just do it like how JP2 did it. Okay. I guess. So you want me to go and live through a world war and then be persecuted by the communists and also go through seminary with the risk of being shot every single day? And then also have like one of the greatest intellects of the 20th century, and you just want me to go and do that? You know, like, yeah. Sure. Let me just decide to do that. Like, it's this weird balance, because there is a high call, right? There is a if you would like to be a saint, it's going to cost everything. You're going to have to yoke yourself to Christ, pick up your cross, and then go. And you can't hold on. You just can't hold on to the things of the world. You can't hold on to money. Mm-hmm. You can't hold on to entertainment. You can't hold on to pleasure. You can't hold on to a lot of relationships even. And I think we're so scared to say that to people, because we don't want to lose friends. We don't want to, mm-hmm. It's this good notion of like, I want to keep a relationship with these people, and I don't want to drive them away from the church. I want to bring them in. But I also think we might've talked about this before. This is what Benedict was talking about when he said the church has got to get smaller before it's going to get bigger. Like, I think we need to be okay with letting people say no to discipleship and watering down. This is all coming from like me reading these saint stories and like realizing, wow, watering down the lives of the saints has just allowed people to say yes to discipleship, because we're not telling them what it is, like what mm-hmm. it costs to follow Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think? Sorry, I just went on a bit of a rant there.
No, it's great. There's also the element, and I don't think we realize this, of the saints are there so that we can see the power of God and how he works in people. And like you said, you can't just decide to be John Paul II.
I've tried. I wake up every day and I say, I'm going to try to read 4 books at once, and it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. You can't. Here's the thing, and this is going to go against Americanism.
Blaze.
You can't really work to become John Paul II either. Like, we as Americans believe in upward mobility very strongly.
Yes.
No matter how poor you are, you can get a scholarship and go to Harvard and then make millions of dollars, because that's how the system works, right?
Yes.
We all know this. But that's not how grace works.
No.
You can't just pull up your bootstraps and become a great saint. You actually have to have the grace, and that's God's decision.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Patrick. God gives some people way more grace than other people.
He most certainly does. And yes. Those people like St. Francis will say, St. Francis, I love this quote. He was like, look, I've been given a lot of grace. And if someone a little bit holier than me had been given the amount of grace, he would be so much holier than I am. Like, he's like, God's working with such a deficit here. He needed to give me so much grace. That's what saints will say. But that's the thing, is that God gives some people more grace than others. The only example you really need is Mary. You can't just decide to be Mary. You can't just decide to be Joseph, you know? But the thing is, right, is like that you don't need to be the best saint there ever was in order to be a great saint. I think that there's something good and holy about Therese and her saying, when I look at the saints and I see myself, I feel like I'm looking at a great mountain and I'm but a little grain of sand trampled underfoot, right?
Yes.
That Sister Bethany Madonna said in response to that, she was like, Therese, if you're a grain of sand, I'm like an amoeba. mm-hmm. And I think that we don't have that holy fear of the saints and the fear of God's work through the saints of how great they really are. I used to joke about this. I used to joke about this with my classmates at Franciscan. I'm like, everybody in this theology program wants to be the next Thomas Aquinas, but nobody wants to be the next And Companions.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Everybody wants to be the next great saint that people talk about at Focus conferences or whatever happens in 100 years. But nobody wants to be the next like group of martyrs, right? And I don't want to be the next group of martyrs. I'm not calling people out. I'm calling myself out, right? Like, We need, I didn't finish my thought. I need to go back to the grace thing. Jesus, it's all about the grace that God gives you, right? You can't do anything. You can't make God give you grace, you know? But if you desire that grace, you can ask for it. And that very desire is a grace. And so the desire to be a saint is a grace. And so if you don't have that desire, ask for that desire. I think there is. I don't know if Curtis Martin is right in saying that everybody can be a canonizable saint. I don't know if God wants everybody to be a canonizable saint.
I don't think he does, or else he would have. Here's the thing, right? If God could have, he didn't, but he could have given everybody the same grace that he gave Mary.
Yeah.
You know, like Jesus still could have come and died on the cross somehow. I don't know how this would all work, but somehow we could have been given this grace to, you know, not have the stain of original sin. It's a possible thing. God allowed us to be fallen, right? And even before Jesus came, there were different people who were closer to him or further away from him that received more or less grace. There's some people that were in his grace and fell from his grace, right? I'm thinking of like King Saul, you know?
Yeah.
Who had a big fall.
call him Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah, was using witch doctors by the end of his life. And it's like, what happened to you, you know?
Dude, yeah.
And I was looking up, I was in the cathedral today, the Tulsa Cathedral. I was looking up at the stained glass windows of all of the saints that they have up there. You know, you see Francis Xavier, Ignatius of Loyola, Peter and Paul, and you know, all the apostles, Catherine of Siena. Like, you just see all these great, the legends, dude, the legends. And I'm like, homies. I'm walking up there. I'm going up to receive communion. I'm just looking up at these windows. And I'm thinking, like, do any of these saints, like, would they have wanted their picture, you know, up in a cathedral? Like, would they have said, like, no, make another one of Jesus, you know? Which is not to say that we shouldn't have images of saints, right? Because they are supposed to be kind of the heroes that we look up to.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives me a lot of thought of, like, man, I do want to be worthy of being put up as an image of Christ. You know, like I do want to be made worthy of, like, I want God to give me enough grace to be someone that could be made a statue out of. But like, there's a part of me that's like, do I just want that so that people still say my name? Do I just want that so that people know about me, so that they hear this podcast 500 years from now? Or do I want it because I want to be completely and totally submissive to Jesus Christ? Like, and yeah, God can work with mixed motives. It's a great thing that we've talked about in the past.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier today.
Yeah, it's still in the past. but I don't have to be perfect. I don't have like God can perfect my desires throughout my life. I don't have to be perfectly in union with his will right now. You know, I would like to be. I try to pray for that very reason. So I don't know. It makes me think, like, how much should my spiritual life be hidden? Like, how much should I actually share on this podcast? How much should I share with other people? How much should I share with my students? Because I don't want that to even, like, come into question, you know?
We've lost the plot a little bit, but... We did. Okay. I don't know who wrote this, but we didn't talk about that then.
No. Say it.
I was going to talk about the hack. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
Cool. So there was nothing holy that he didn't sell. It's like that. You don't want to sell everything that you have in your, you need to keep your spiritual life at least partially for yourself. But anyway, I go back to the cost again. I think we've done several things when it comes to sainthood. We've undermined the accessibility of sainthood, of canonizable sainthood. We've undermined the cost of sainthood itself. And I think that that does a disservice to the saints themselves, but it also kind of just makes them If ironically, it makes them like sports heroes, because it's funny because like those people also have gone through intense amounts of.
Yeah.
That's the thing is like not everybody can do, you know, not everybody can do what Michael Phelps did. Very few people can do what Michael Phelps did, but Michael Phelps did.
I would argue that only Michael Phelps could have done what Michael Phelps did, because he is the only one that did it.
Yeah. And not only did Michael Phelps, he didn't just work hard to do what he did. He was also born with a lot of the things that allowed him to do what he did. And
weird fingers,
right? Like that's part of it. And we recognize that for athletes, but not for sainthood. I think we need to recognize it. And it sucks to say that, 'cause it's not fun. It's not the fun part of the church, that, hey, there are some things that you can't have. Sorry. But the good thing in the end is that in heaven, all things are for all people. So the holiness of Mary is your holiness. The holiness of John Paul II is yours, and your holiness is theirs. You're welcome, guys. I'm giving you my holiness, too.
I know. Let me just walk up into the club. Hey, how about some Stromboli?
Yeah. Hey. Because regardless of whether it's a pitcher full of water, a thimble full of water, or an ocean full of water, they're all full. So we're all going
all
to be
water.
Filled. And they're all water. We're all going to be filled with God's grace in heaven. But some of us will be more full than others. And it's ultimately, right, I think, again, the cost of discipleship is the cross. And I think that even saying that, we still haven't said enough.
Yeah.
Because even saying that still somewhat undersells what the cost actually is, what the cross actually was. And it's being married, it's coming more and more into clear view. Is like, ah, yes, final vocation. This is what all those men's talks were about. Mm-hmm. Now it's time for you to do that for one specific person. And if I can't do that for her, how am I supposed to be a saint? Right. Yeah. Like, so that's like, it's, I think marriage is a good thing. 'Cause it's, I think this just in, marriage is good. I think marriage is a good thing, 'cause it allows you to really focus in that death to self to one person. And I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, this is all very good. I'm just sitting here wrestling with all these thoughts, because I do it. Reading these stories, right, like ignites this desire in me, you know, and maybe that's God telling me to pray for more grace. Maybe that's the grace that's already been given me saying, hey, use me, you know? And I also recognize that not everybody has that desire that I have within me. And that's okay. That just means that I have to be more understanding when maybe other people don't see things the way that I see them. You know, this is all part of humility. It's like recognizing that, yes, God has given us all different things. And I need to be attentive to what he has given the person in front of me, and not only attentive to what he has given me, because it's not the same. Like this humility of, that's why Mary is just such a perfect example, is because she knows that she's been given everything, literally everything, in the person of Christ to dwell within her and live in her home. And she gets to take care of Jesus. Like Jesus would have died had she not fed him, you know, which is just nuts to think about. Like everything was entrusted to her. But she didn't lord it over anybody. She didn't flex on anybody. She understood that, like, this is what God has given me, and God's will is perfect, which means that I'm no better or worse off than anybody. It just means that he knew that it was best for me to have this.
Mary at the mom's group. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What's that, Stephanie? Oh, you brought orange slices. That's great. My son is giving you his body and blood for food and drink. Sorry. No. Mary flexing on. I'm sorry, that was bad. Keep going with your thought.
No, it was good. I don't have any more thoughts. I just think that we need to pray for her humility and for her understanding, because she was perfectly humble, but she also understood why she needed to be humble. Like, she wasn't just humble out of no reason. She was full of the Holy Spirit, which included understanding. So,
yes.
Just I think there's a lot. There's a lot there. I don't know what else to say. I want to answer Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner questions, but I think everybody should read Witness to Hope by George Weigel. It's very big.
It's a big boy. I'll put it on my list.
Have you read it?
No.
It's probably not. It's not really anything that you don't know necessarily about JP2, but they just go into such detail, and you get to hear all these incredible, just little things about his life mm-hmm. and the people that he was with, and when he was in the theater group, and when he was in seminary, and when, like, the things that he argued about with Father Reginald Garrigou Lagrange.
Oh, he just hung out with good old RGL.
He was his doctoral advisor.
Did oh, you know yeah, that? That's right. Yeah,
I didn't know that. I learned that from reading this book. Full of facts, full of knowledge, but
wait,
also
full JP2 of... Wait, JP2 was Lagrange's?
No, the other way around.
Other way around, okay.
Yeah. They disagreed because JP2 refused to use the words divine object in his thesis when he was describing God. And because and Father Reginald Garrigou Lagrange said that you should because he was trying to implement this new theological language. It's very interesting.
Ah, the Thomist.
Yes. Good thoughts. Do you have anything else on that? I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to belabor this point.
Let's get some questiones.
Yes,
in there.
Please give me something to be happy about. Or all right, probably not knowing this segment.
Okay. All right. This one's about intentional boredom. Stop me if you've heard this one before. Okay.
Okay.
Hello. Please keep my name anonymous. Hello. Please keep my name anonymous. I've been thinking about everything you said in the last podcast and have been saying about living a contemplative life and intentional boredom. Oh, wait. Yeah, this is the video calling all the time question. Do you remember this one?
I do.
Okay, so yes, we've heard this one before.
All right, bye.
Sorry, bye, concerned citizen. We talked to you already. This one says, hey, howdy, hey.
We did hey, howdy, hey.
We did hey, howdy, hey?
Yep. You got to delete them after we do them.
I think I did, but I'm not on my work computer, so it hasn't synced. It hasn't synced.
There we go. Great.
Oh yeah, this is the I was recently dumped for being not Catholic enough. Okay, fine. Well, we finally got to the guy who said that he's not really a fan of our little MP3 recording. So we now it's time for your question. We did that?
I think we did his.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Would it be inappropriate to use Catholic Match just to make Catholic friends? That was the question.
Did we talk?
We
about
definitely
that?
Haven't done this one.
Okay.
Okay. Like, hey, Dr. Ethan and Nurse Nevi. Not really a fan of your little MP3 recordings that you make with your friends. JK, the pod is okay. But I have a question. Let's suppose, hypothetically, you're a 19-year-old male college student who is spending the summer grind working and living with secular dudes in the middle of nowhere in the middle of a global pandemic, hypothetically, and you have no Catholic community besides the friends you left behind in school. Would it be appropriate to use Catholic Match just to make Catholic friends without being open to dating? I can't imagine there'll be many Catholics my age on there, but Homeboy is starved for a community of others who are pursuing holiness and will make him holier. I've definitely picked up bad habits working and living with secular dudes, and I don't want to miss this. I don't want this summer to be a period of spiritual and personal regression. Thanks, Lonely in Wisconsin.
Okay, Lonely. Sorry we're getting to this so late because it is the end of the summer and you're probably done with your internship, so sorry.
Sorry. I kept jokingly putting it off, and yeah. It was probably like...
we probably needed help, but we've written other questions, so it's not, I mean, it's, we have such a popular podcast.
I know, we just can't get to everybody.
Hey, listen. No, you should not use a dating service to just find friends.
I think you knew the answer to that question.
If it was a finding friends service, it would be called a finding friends service and not a dating service. You don't want to mislead people, because that's just going to lead to... They're going to be like, oh, look, this guy's interested in me. And you're going to be like, oh, look, a friend. And you'll be like, I just want to be friends. And they'll be like, what the heck? You didn't even get to know me. That's a great way to just murder someone's self-confidence.
I got friend-zoned on a dating app.
Yeah. Before, in the first message, like, hey, I just want to be friends. What?
Wow.
Did you just see my picture and decide that you wanted to be friends with me? So maybe don't do that. What I would say is I think you're limiting your scope. Let me tell you why.
I love the
little town. The town you're living in probably has a Knights of Columbus chapter,
probably,
or there's one close by. It's probably full of dudes in their 60s and 70s, but they are still your brothers in the body of Christ. They are still baptized Catholics. You can be in community with them and not lose anything. In fact, you probably actually learn a lot more than just being in. A lot of times we think community is just being with a bunch of other young, attractive people. And it's like, no, you don't just get to hang out with the beautiful girls and call it community. Like, no, it's not allowed.
You need to hang out with the boys, especially the balding boys.
The balding boys. I think we limit our scope too much, and we think that we can't be in community with people that are older than us, or if we're not married, we can't have married friends, or if we're married, we can't have single friends, or if we have a young family, we can't be friends with an older family. Like, that's all of that is dumb. we are all one in Christ. And so I would say just move outside of your circle. Yes, you probably want to hang out with young people, and there's something good about that. But you also have a phone. You can call young people. So
fair enough.
That's what I would say is try to meet the old folks in your community, and you might be surprised at how freaking dope they can be, because they're human beings and not wastes of space like our culture tries to tell us.
Ooh, spicy.
I know. Here's the thing. When you're 19, you kind of need someone to just shape you up, whippersnapper.
And when you're 15 and someone tells you they love you, you're going to believe them.
Is that a movie?
No, that's from Taylor Swift.
Is that from a
that's
film?
That's from the voice of our generation, Taylor, middle name redacted Swift.
Does she have a middle name?
No, her middle name is just, I don't know.
You were just, the plane was up and you didn't land it. It was there.
I feel like she threw the plane in the air. I'm pretty sure she said something is my middle name. Heartbreak is my middle name. Probably. Said that in one of her songs.
Moneybags.
Taylor Moneybag Swift. Oh my goodness. Okay. Did you do the one from, I'm not going to say his name, but did you do the, this guy sent a question to both of us. So I'm sure you did it with Emma. Right, I'm sure you did this question with Emma.
Probably. What was it about?
It was about, I really appreciated the advice both of you gave regarding the dude with the girlfriend and the crush. While I'm not in that situation, it did make me rethink some of my current friendships.
No, I didn't. We didn't get this one.
Okay, cool. All right. Hi, Ethan and Patrick. Sorry.
You said cool, and it sounded like it's a Google. That's funny.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I've been a longtime listener of the Odka, the lesser known shortening of podcast, and have thought about writing in a few times over the past few months, but never got around to it. I heard your plea for more emails in Kadir John, and that I decided to overcome my laziness and click the compose button. Then he talked about how we've inspired him to read more and that he didn't back Bonaventure's book club. I'm sorry, you can't listen to the podcast anymore.
Fired.
I really appreciated the advice both of you gave regarding the dude with the girlfriend and the crush. So he has a girlfriend and a crush. That guy.
Eleazar is going to be on this podcast every single week for the next year.
Hey, if that was you. And
he messed up so bad. He's never going to listen to our podcast again.
Eleazar, if you're listening to this podcast still, first of all, thank you.
Thank you. You have no reason to.
You are better than us. And I want to know what happened.
You have to update us, please.
You have to update it. He sent it in with an anonymous email. There's no way for me to check.
And if you're one of the best part is probably one out of the three people from that thing. He said they all listen. So one out of three definitely still listens.
One, yeah, the 33%.
We just
got to
figure out which girl. Send us an email. If anybody in that situation knows, please send us an email.
This is like after the OJ trial when everybody wrote an autobiography, just like that, exactly the same thing.
Exactly like that. How I would have broken up with Eleazar if I actually was the one dating him.
How I would have gotten rid of the gloves I used to break up with Eleazar. What actually happened in the Ford Bronco when I was running away from Eleazar? All right,
let's stop calling Eleazar OJ Simpson. I think we should not do that.
No. Someone else was in the Bronco.
Oh.
Okay. Anyway. Got it. So, while I'm not in that situation, it did make me rethink some of my current friendships and how close I've been to that in the past. In particular, I have a few female friends who have helped me a lot with life things, and I've known that I need to be careful with boundaries, but I didn't realize it was that big of a deal as you made it on the podcast, particularly regarding relationship advice. Oh, there's no question here. Dang it. He's just saying thanks for the advice.
All right. Well, thanks for wasting my time.
Wait.
No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry.
To spend more time cultivating solid male friendships. How do I do that?
Okay,
pretty much.
Great. That's a question. There we go.
Well, he doesn't say how did I do that, but he says I need to. So let's just ask.
Let's create a question for him. First of all, there's probably a Knights of Columbus chapter in your hometown. The Knights of Columbus is my catch-all answer. Does he say, like, if he's in college, out of college?
I'm pretty sure.
If you're in college, the answer is find dudes that like to do what you like to do and do it with them. If you're out of college, the answer is find dudes that like to do what you like to do and do it with them.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's pretty easy, because a lot of male friendship is based upon doing an activity together. And so if you get really into boxing. Go join a boxing club, or, you know, like, even join a boxing gym and just start hanging out with those guys. You know, they might not be super Catholic, but that might be where you have to start if your male Catholic community is not phenomenal. There's also the advice from the last question, which is go and find some people that might be out of your age range. Go join the Knights of Columbus. But yeah, I think it's very simple as find something you like to do. Use your intentional boredom to figure out what the heck you actually enjoy instead of just playing video games and scrolling through social media. And then go start doing that thing. And hopefully you'll start to meet some cool people that like to do that thing with you. And you can have boys. You can be friends. You'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Phoebe and I we got back from our hiking trip. And we were like, well, you know, you really can't get together at houses anymore. You can really only get together outside. So let's just start a hiking group.
That's so cool.
And just do that. And it was like, we were like, you know what? Let's not make it like a specifically Catholic thing, but like, let's do like, let's like invite all our Catholic friends, but like anybody can come, you know? Yeah.
I think that's phenomenal.
It's evangelistic.
Something that's missing is people stepping out, taking a risk, inviting somebody to do something with them that they like. I think that's very valuable. I think you're basically the next Carol Wojtyła.
I'm basically the next Yam Turnsky.
Okay.
He's the yam who's made of man. He is yam man.
Do we have any other questions, or can we wrap this guy up?
So there's one other question.
Okay, here we go.
She's just asking. I don't know if it's a dating question, but it's a question.
Okay. Do we have to do it right now?
No.
Okay. Let's. How about we savor that? Sit
Let's
on
put
it.
This one on the back burner.
Put
Sorry,
this one
Madeline.
On the back burner. It's okay. We'll get to you. Patrick, it's just so good to have you back. I've missed you. It's been 3 weeks, I think, since we've done a podcast together.
It's been a long time.
It's been the longest I've ever gone without you by my side, baby. You know who sang that? Taylor Swift. I don't know if she actually did. Just got to say, I love having you back on the freaking cast.
Mm-hmm. It's good to be back. We have talked in the last 2 weeks, but
I went to your wedding. I was there. I was by your side as I gave you away to that woman.
That was funny. I think you made that joke during the rehearsal, right? You're like, when do I give Patrick away?
Yeah, I'm sure I did. I made a lot of jokes that I just forgot about. I blacked out during the whole toast.
The whole thing.
I don't remember what I said, but I hope it
After
was
both
fun.
Of your toasts, Phoebe leaned over to us and she was like, neither of them said anything about us as a couple.
Well, I thought about that, but I don't really know you guys as a couple.
Yeah, no, neither does really. I mean, Emily kind of does, but yeah, you're right.
So I was like, well, I could try to, I didn't want it to sound fake or inauthentic. And so I was like, well, I do know Patrick and these are things that are true.
Yes.
So I'm going to say them. And
oh, it was a great toast. It was okay. Such a good toast.
You're fine. You guys weren't mad?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh gosh.
Yeah. No. There was no way we could have done that. The wedding was perfect. Everything was so good.
It was very sweaty in that barn, I will say.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
It was just like the vibe of it being the college girls dancing and then the few children under the age of 10 dancing was just it just choice, just absolutely incredible.
It was gorgeous. And now we got to that bar and I was like, man, now all the boys understand why I have them roll up their sleeves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was good. It was so fun. You had a great wedding. You did a great job.
Thanks.
I didn't pass out. You didn't pass out. I cried a little bit. You didn't cry that much. We killed it together. I think you and I were the best part of that wedding.
It was true. We were easily the best. I mean, Phoebe's dress was good, but like she couldn't top me and Ethan, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see her try.
Kidding. Hitting honey.
Phoebe was gorgeous. Phoebe was the You're best great. Part of the wedding. Obviously.
Phoebe was the best part of the wedding.
Patrick, do you have anything else for the people?
You know, if I had to pick a song for the crunch, I would say that our song would be a slamming screen door.
I don't get it.
Our song would be us whispering with our voices real slow, talking on the phone with our voices real low because it's late and your mama don't know.
What are you, is this from a movie?
Our song is a lit cigarette. I'm trying to remember. I don't have it in front of me.
Oh, old Moneybags, back at it again.
Good old Taylor Moneybags Swift.
Taylor Moneybags. Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us. We will be praying for you, and we will see you all next week.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.